All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Wednesday, August 10th. I am Doug Norrie. Across from me is James Davis. No shirt on because it's 1,000 degrees in here, but we're going to get rolling with our baseball podcast for the day. James, how's it going?
Yeah, it's good. Better now that they stopped running the circular saw outside. I'm ready to drop some knowledge bombs.
Long-time listeners of the podcast know that the outside of my home is a hotbed of just constant noise. And we were able to get the 30-minute window, I think, here before the next crew of noisemakers shows up. So we're going to get going. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you build lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Right now we're talking MLB, NFL coming very soon. If you want to see what we're all about, you head over to the site, take a look at all the free content we have going up each day. And you can also grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Simply hit one button. Spits out lineups. You can get up to 25 lineups if you want. Stacking, double stacking, really just about all the features you need to get yourself started for MLB. And like I said, really excited for what we have coming up for NFL season, about a week or two away from releasing that. And that's pretty much all you need to get started. FanDuel and DraftKings, you're good to go. Today, we're going to talk about a Wednesday slate of baseball. It's not necessarily a double slate. There are a few early games. I think we can touch on those, the mid-afternoon slate, only because there is a pitching option that I think makes cash games fairly safe, and then we'll really dive in to the evening slate of games, which I think there's a decent amount to talk about there. James, let's start with the afternoon slate. This is the 3 o'clock game, the 3 o'clock tilt. There's two games.
So you're not doing the 12 o'clock tilt.
Nah, I'm gonna ignore that one because the way FanDuel at least broke it down is like they're calling that the 12 o'clock and all day slate, and then they're calling the 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock games the afternoon.
What kind of sadist plays the all day slate starting at noon when you have no idea who's going to play at nighttime?
It's really hard. There's a couple of scenarios where I think it is actually worth it. Like yesterday was one of them. It was a 3 o'clock Coors game where the bats there were so much better than everybody else that if you could pretty much you get a lot of safety from there from those bats and then just roster the pitcher which you basically know is going to play. But yeah, I mean, not being able to swap guys out there is really tough.
It's probably off a lot of radars to stack the Coors game in the 3 o'clock. The only game is at 3 o'clock. The people show up to play the 3 o'clock slate.
Yeah, but people
get that off the radar Coors Texas stack.
But the thing is, what I consider to be obvious sometimes is not to all. And so any percentage of people that you got getting money in unsafe in a game that wasn't there.
Right, they're paying the rake for everything.
Exactly, 100%. Okay. So let's talk about the 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock games. Do you think we can put some lineups in for these?
Yeah, I think so. On a two-game slate, it can feel a little bit dicey sometimes, but the optimal lineups actually look pretty sharp to me. Scott Kazmir, I think he's who you were alluding to, mm-hmm. on the top of the pitcher heap there. He's a pretty clear number one for me. His peripherals have been good all season, striking out better than a guy per inning, and he did have a rough last go-around, but it was against Boston. So I'm not sure how much you want to weigh that. Probably nothing at all. They have just tons and tons of righties. He's much, much stronger against left-handed tilted lineups. So, and against the Phillies, who just are bad against lefties, righties, ambidextrous pitchers, knuckleballers, that one pitcher that had the six fingers a few years ago. Alfonseca, right? I'm all in on Kazmir for that early slate.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I fall. And this is the only reason I find this slate interesting, is on FanDuel at least, where you... If you're not playing him in a cash game on this early slate, then you're probably getting your money in a little bad to start.
He's seems like it.
The downgrade from him to Gio, who's the next highest projected player for pitcher, is pretty significant. The money line for Kazmir started at -188, is all the way up to -215 now. The Phillies are just projected. The Phillies are not a very good team. I know they got to Maeda a little bit last night. That's not indicative. That doesn't necessarily mean that it happens to Kazmir here.
Philly's lowest WOBA in the majors against left-handed pitching.
Yeah, they're strikeout machines.
Top five strikeout machine.
Yeah.
And where is this game? Is this in Philly?
No, it's in LA.
It's in LA, in a much worse pitcher's park than they play in at home.
Right.
So, this is one of those everything is going wrong for the Phillies tonight situation.
Right. So this is why I think it's interesting. And it's really the only, Kazmir's mainly the reason I wanted to mention it, because when you see something like this, when you see such a precipitous drop off from pitcher one to pitcher two, which I think is the case here, this makes sense for me to get some bankroll in. Sure. on this. If I'm going to look at hitters, because I need to fill out the lineup with other guys, give me a couple, players that you think, who's our system showing as a play here?
It's interesting. There's actually sort of a natural double stack bubbling up to the surface with the Dodgers and the Nationals. This makes sense because you've got some pitchers who are prone potentially to giving up big games. First is Jeremy Hellickson, a guy who's never struck anybody out and is on a higher trajectory in terms of strikeouts per nine this season, but still not a guy who's going to scare you off. You know, he's got six total strikeouts in his last three starts. So
is that bad?
That is not very strong. The Dodgers have some guys who feast on right-handed pitching. Relatively cheap guys. Utley, we'll throw Justin Turner in there as well. And then if Josh Reddick gets out there, he'll be a fine option as well.
So. Yeah, Adrian Gonzalez in the middle of the lineup. They have, you know, yep. they just have, you know, Corey Seager even. So they have.
Yeah, Corey Seager's expensive. I'm saying
right.
guys that I'll definitely play. Mm-hmm. On a short slate, it can be tougher to pay up for hitting, depending on how all the positions shake out. It's such a narrow range that you can't just jam all the most expensive guys.
No, we're not going to be able to grab them all, and that's fine. I think you're going to get, like, I think Turner's a reverse splits guy without looking it up right away. So I'm all over the Dodgers, and then Bryce Harper. If you were to play today, I would
auto pick.
There's a
windmill slamming him home.
You know, it's interesting on him. He sat yesterday. I was actually relieved because it saved me a lot of typing in our chat room of just not having to like figure out what was going to happen with him necessarily. So, but he's still only 4,100. If you were in the lineup today against Tomlin, I would just do it on the call that if the Nats think he's, you know, healthy enough to play, then it's you have to be
somewhat cautious with him now. So him right. returning to the lineup would be an indicator that he's probably ready. I think sense of urgency, it doesn't seem like. So
I think you're either he comes back today or he goes to the DL. That would be my. He's now sat out three games, I believe, and I can't yep. believe they would just keep the roster spot open for him to see if he can work it out. So if he's playing today, I think you easily play him in cash games. Trey Turner at the top of the lineup, not good at baseball, but in a good spot.
Josh Tomlin, by the way, is just a great guy to stack against for upside because he doesn't strike anyone out, also doesn't walk anybody, and is a fly ball oriented pitcher, 42% ground ball rate. Historically 38%, so he's like your dream scenario guy to stack against if you just need home runs.
And I'm mostly focused on FanDuel here. I don't think I'm going to head over to DraftKings because I don't want to roster the starting pitcher too over there on the short slate because I don't want to put Gio in against a decent Indians team and the other two guys stink. So this is really only FanDuel for me. And I think you actually can play some matchups on Cleveland. If the price is correct, you know, guys like Lindor is coming a little cheaper on FanDuel still. Carlos Santana is still coming cheap switch hitting, and then Roger Davis. So I don't know. There's enough one offs and or just like you said, natural stacking situations here that makes this a very, very enticing slate for me. And we'll have all the information, so we're not going to worry about, you know, lineups. We're going to be set. I would say we're pretty much set at 2:00 with lines and line movement. And we're all good to go. You can set it and forget it, and you're moving on. Let's go.
Nice rhyming there, by the way.
You like that?
Yeah, that was really good.
I didn't even practice that, but I'm going to...
You didn't plan that? I always plan all my jokes a couple days in advance.
I know you do. That's why they seem so stilted and obvious. Let's head over to the night slate of games. Let's start with pitching. In terms of salary, there's no one that really jumps to the top of the salary chain in terms of ace level pitching, but I think there's enough that we can be interested in. Well, I guess Verlander's placed up there, but I think there's enough that we can be interested about here. Where are we starting for safety cash games on either site? Although I think there's probably going to be some overlap here.
Well, for safety cash games, I'm looking at
safety cash. You guys can join.
That was the question, right?
You guys can join into those safety cash. Sorry, safety. I should have said safety / cash games, not your safety cash games on FanDuel and DraftKings. Go. Yeah. Who's the pitcher that jumps?
It
to the
is
top?
Tricky because when you look at the top of the name or the names on the top of the list to start, and you see a guy like Felix Hernandez, historically he would be a guy that we would snap, put in there, and not even think twice about it. But it's not so easy with that today. Hernandez, you know, we've been keeping an eye on. He came back from the DL. He's been he was very, very erratic before going on the DL and hasn't really been that much better since coming back. I mean, the Ks have been ticking back up, but the wildness is really a real, real issue. And he's locked into that 100 pitch count as well. So you have to take him down. Like especially if you're modeling off of, say, like a whole season projection, be really careful about not just assuming he's going to throw 7 innings a game or whatever he's done historically, because if he's only going to throw 100 pitches, it's really hard to sneak in 7 or 8 innings against a good team and 100 pitches.
Yeah, he has huge warning signs. And we actually, before we even came on here, we did spend some time looking at his projection and making sure it looked correct. The signs, like you said, there's the wildness. There's also been a 2-mile-an-hour dip in velocity from 92 to 90, and that can sometimes be the death knell for a pitcher, where if you're just dropping off just that many miles per hour in your fastball, a guy, especially for a guy like him that sort of lived on that fastball, that is trouble. And it's really showing. The strikeouts are not there. He's not able to work in the strike zone as much anymore, and he's walking guys. It's one of those where how low can you go on his price, sort of, when he's in that mid 8,000 on DraftKings and sort of in the same area.
If he goes to 4,500, I'm playing him. Oh my God. I'm going to put him in the second pitcher two slot.
The Mike League story. So this is where we're going to sort of be dared. You know, on FanDuel, it's totally out of play. He's 9,600, so don't worry about it. I don't think I'm not even going to consider it really there. But DraftKings in that mid 8,000s, well, now you're kind of in that place where maybe we get probably a little lucky in the sense that he's not that expensive, but he's a dog facing a good team. So we just have that narrative piece of it too, or statistical piece of it, where we just don't need to worry about it. But yeah, Fernandez is a worry for me. So it's not Fernandez. So who is it then?
The who is it for me today is probably going to be Dallas Keuchel. We've recommended him in the past, and he's a really, really interesting guy because similarly to Hernandez, like arguably his best days are sort of behind him. Unlike Hernandez, though, he still has a lot of the stuff that makes him such a strong pitcher. The first thing is the ground ball rate. With a super, super elite ground ball rate, it's much easier for him to string together longer starts, even against relatively tough competition. The K rate is still competitive, although, you know, possibly not ideal. And the matchup today, who is at Minnesota? Yeah, we talked about Minnesota. Minnesota's not a perfect matchup, but it's also not a automatic death sentence or anything like
that. Their lineup doesn't go particularly deep. They do strike out a lot. Keuchel pitched a complete game last time against the Rangers. We were all over that. Actually, this is funny because this is 5 days later from when we had Keuchel and Garcia paired together on DraftKings. And Garcia, who we'll get to in a second, came an inning away from the double complete game shutout, which is kind of...
This is what we're shooting for every night. And sometimes sometimes we don't.
And actually, Garcia should have gotten it. But yeah, Keuchel comes in. He's the money line favorite, so the win expectation there is higher than most other pitchers on this slate. I take that back. No, that's been bet down. He started at minus 140. He's down to minus 120. So that's headed in the wrong direction. So is the run line on the Twins for him. I still think pedigree-wise, he probably is the pitcher. Though, like you said, the strikeout rate doesn't leave a ton of room for error. So if he's going to be inducing this much contact, you can run a little bad there, and that could be trouble. It's not a total lock for me that he's the guy, though, coming in right now. All right, so a couple other guys. Jaime Garcia, he's another guy the system liked. He's coming off a really strong game. I believe it was against the Braves. Today, he actually is the highest money line guy at minus 168. Against the Reds. The Reds are a team we've been stacking, targeting pitchers against. It hasn't necessarily worked out in the short term. Do you think we can go back to the well?
Yeah, I do think so. You mentioned the Reds. They bottom four team in the league in terms of WOBA against left-handed pitching, and they also build in lots of upside by being a top five team in terms of striking out against lefties. So Garcia is another guy that when you play him, it sort of feels like asking for a heart attack, but...
Well, it's impossible to watch him.
But this is the thing about getting value at starting pitcher. And again, especially on DraftKings on a night like tonight, in the absence of an ace, it just necessarily means your pitcher two slot is going to be someone who's not a top tier guy. And there's just not many guys in the Garcia tier, or Keuchel and Garcia kind of in the same tier, that have 70 fantasy point upside, right?
Right. And on DraftKings, if you roster them both together, you're paying $15.5 in salary total, and yeah, that's just nothing. And so when you get you don't need to have those complete game shutouts. I mean, honestly, you can't project that for any pitcher, but you just need them to be good or above average really at those prices, because you're in a situation where you've completely loaded up on bats, really on both sides. The price and again, all of our picks are relative to price, so they're not just not like in a vacuum, this is like the best guy. It's just they're cheap and they're in good situations.
Right. So talk me out of Verlander then, because Verlander's a guy who's going to be, I mean, would you suspect he'll be the highest owned pitcher in cash games on FanDuel today?
Probably, because he's only 10. I mean, so again, this is the same thing. I feel like this is just a repeat of our last podcast where these guys all came on the same slate. Verlander is 13,000 on DraftKings. It's just a non-starter. You don't need to do it. It's way too expensive.
Yeah. So FanDuel.
Okay, right. So FanDuel,
20 strikeouts in his last two starts, averaging 58 fantasy points to start in those times against Houston and the Mets. So
he's the best pitcher. I can't necessarily talk you out of it. I just probably think that the savings you get on Keuchel and maybe, I don't know. I can't talk you out of it. I mean, do you think that's where you end up going? The system's not saying do it, but do you think you override it in this case? You pay $1,300
more? I'm strongly considering. I guess, you know, and we've seen this many times in the past, but should there be more cheap bats that bubble to the surface, then that might move the needle a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it. I know that most people will, I guess, because the perceived safety going from, or the safety drop from Verlander to Keuchel or to Garcia is pretty dramatic. So I think it's at least worth considering. He is the highest overall points guy in our system today.
Yeah, and actually that hasn't accounted for the line drop in Houston.
For Keuchel.
Yeah, so I think actually he's slightly favored over Keuchel now in terms of raw points. And I think once we push through an update with that line movement in Houston, it'll be a little bit more pronounced, and maybe that will just be the thing that maybe sways me a little bit more. I'm not positive without actually seeing the effect it has.
Right. And we're waiting for lineups to come out.
But I think you're probably right. I think Verlander, he's the best talent, and he has a good situation in Great Park. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he ends up being the guy. Maybe we should have started with him.
Jay Happ is another guy people are going to look at tonight. He's been quite sharp recently and uncharacteristically sort of really striking guys out. He's got two games with 11 strikeouts since July started, a 9K game, two 6K games, and a 5K game. So not a guy, like he's a guy I automatically dismiss when I look at the list usually just because he doesn't strike anyone out normally, but he's been pitching a lot better. Ignore the run support thing. He's got 15 wins this year, which is completely ridiculous. But
yeah, the other guy that's kind of just will bubble up a little bit maybe just because of the money line is Jason Hamill. He's coming back today. He's always a pitch count guy, so I can't totally trust it. He's a big favorite, and the Cubs are big favorites over the Angels, but the pitch count worries me too much there. So I feel why risk it? Yeah, I feel people were going to ask him. He's a good pitcher, but he can't go far enough in the games because they're so tight with the pitch count. All right, on the bats side of the ball, really some interesting stuff going on here today. We have a Ranger game, which has an insanely high total at 10.5 right now.
Yeah, in Texas. Well, and bringing the Coors fellas into Texas without getting the Coors bump for prices is kind of interesting.
Well, the Rangers seem like they're getting a Coors line, and they're again same kind of deal. Like you're not paying those salaries. So I have them at 5.95 projected runs. Red Sox at 5.5, almost even. So who are some other teams here? Milwaukee's coming up there. There's some interesting teams here. Where does it start for you for Toronto at 5.25? Where does it start for you for cash games with bats? Is there a team that jumps to the top, or are you kind of just gonna create some stuff with a mix of these hitters from those higher run line teams?
Yeah, the way things are shaking out right now is again sort of a natural stack. It's a stack between Texas and Toronto, and then just jamming in awesome guys around them. So the righties on Texas in particular look pretty sharp. Luke Roy and Beltre. De La Rosa is just...
Yeah, Desmond too.
Nothing. Yeah, yep. De La Rosa is just nothing to write home about at all. So they're going to come up in a game like that. And then the other guys, we can talk a little bit about our bad luck Blue Jays last night. But they're back in basically the same exact situation today as they were in yesterday, being at home against a lefty whose stats are inflated by pitching in a great home park. So I'm looking real hard at both of those teams.
Yeah, we stacked Blue Jays last night against Smiley, you know, because of the increased fly balls that you get from him in his profile. And we really got exactly what we wanted there. He walked more guys than he struck out. The Blue Jays put the ball in play. It just didn't go anywhere. And they missed. It's just that, you know, the old baseball is a game of inches thing where Bautista misses a home run by a foot in the first inning. And Tulo comes up with the bases loaded. They can't get it done.
So hit a fly ball to first base.
Yeah, there's just these little things that happen. These little things that happen where if you showed me Smiley's line, independent of the earned runs 100%. After the game, like six innings, three walks, two Ks, you're like, oh my God, we did it. You know, like the Blue Jays went crazy. So yeah, I'm right back to the Snell doesn't worry you. I mean,
no, Snell's fine. But again, he's got some of the same warning signs that Smiley does. I mean, the difference between Snell and Smiley is Snell has the ERA to back up the perception of him, but his walks are also really, really high. And, you know, he's 27 walks in 57 innings, which is not good. That's like a walk rate over 4 per 9. an old patient team like the Blue Jays that can still mash. This, to me, has disaster start written all over it for him personally.
Yeah, I'm with you too. And the other team that I think is going to start coming up more, and again, we always run into this early problem with the Cubs, because again, like I say, I could put this as a drop in there sometimes, Cubs run line, something like that, is the Cubs never have an over-under at this time of day, and I'm pretty sure it's because they're waiting on weather reports and which way the wind is blowing in Chicago to really inform what they think the run expectation is going to be. I would guess against Ricky Nolasco that the Cubs are in that mid-5 range. So that's going to be a team. They're coming in a little low in the system now, but that is a team that I think as we get more a little bit more information coming in throughout the day, you're going to see guys like Bryant and Rizzo and Zobrist, maybe Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward's just a guy our system just can't quit. Absolutely cannot quit you. On Jason Hayward, so it probably might be time to look at him a little bit more closely. But this Cubs team runs so far down the lineup that even last night it had Wilson Contreras at first in the optimal lineup, and then it's something a little adjusted. But Wilson Contreras was in the optimal lineup, batting eighth, and he ended up hitting a home run. So not to say it was incorrect or correct to do it based on that result, but the Cubs just run so damn deep that a guy like Nolasco, who doesn't have any strikeout ability, is in real trouble against them.
Another one I'm looking at pretty hard today is the Pirates against Eddie Jackson there, old Edwin Jackson.
Easy Eddie. Easy
First
Eddie
started Jackson. Pitching in the majors when I was in college. So I've been out of college for a while. I'm not like 24. but this season, I mean, 5 Ks per 9, 4 walks per 9, 39% ground ball rate, complete recipe for disaster. Get him out of San Diego and things get particularly grisly. So there's a number of Pirates bats you could probably jam in there. McCutchen comes to mind. He's still underpriced relative to what he can do in a given game. Last time I said that, he had two home runs in a game, so you can guess, pencil him in for at least a dong tonight. He's going to hit a dong tonight, I'm going to call
it. Well, it's funny on a guy like Edwin Jackson where you're like, man, that 5 ERA and he's running good. So, like,
he's been a couple things break the other way and he's up in the 6 range.
Yeah, so. Right, 5.5 XFIP. Yeah, and those I like that call a lot because the Pirates have a couple guys in, like, Kong is, I think, a reverse splits guy, so the ready-ready matchup doesn't worry me there. Marte and McCutchen are better against lefties, but Edwin Jackson's just, like, the guy, it doesn't matter. Like, your splits kind of don't matter at some point when the pitcher's this bad. I love the Pirates. They're coming cheaper across the board, too.
Yep.
What about the Red Sox tonight? They're a team I mentioned before also in terms of the higher run lines. They face Eovaldi in Fenway, have a high run line. The prices on them are high because they're just a good team. They've been good consistently all season. So you guys like Ortiz are, you know, in the mid-4,000s. Mookie Betts is like in the mid-4,000s, 5,000 on DraftKings. Is it too much to pay for them against a guy like Eovaldi, even though it's in Fenway? You get, you know, the nice park, good offense.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you have to be judicious. You can't play all of them, but...
I can.
You can?
Yeah, I'll figure out a way.
Holy cow.
I figure out ways around these things.
Yeah. But it's a perfect situation to... You know, when there's so much value across some of these other games and you're paying down a pitcher just to snipe a couple guys that you really, really like. You mentioned Betts. Ortiz is a guy for me. I'm probably going to just wind up playing because I don't see a lot of other fantastic options at first base.
Let me ask you, Rizzo at 55, Ortiz at 53.
Whew. Yeah, that's pretty close. I think I'll take Ortiz. I mean...
Okay. Mookie Betts and Chris Bryant, same price, basically.
I like Chris Bryant in that spot, I think.
Yeah, that's a close one for me. The Betts thing is, I don't know. I love that Bryant hit second in the lineup. The Betts has a little some of that speed upside that Bryant doesn't have. It's really close. Basically, these are the
Poor
questions.
Chris Bryant, all he has to do is hit 27 home runs and 7 steals 2/3 of the way through the season. He's getting not enough upside.
Chris Bryant, I suspect that's true. I suspect that Chris Bryant, I always think of like which guys show up in optimal lineups the most for us over the whole entire course of the season, and I think Bryant is probably the leader in the clubhouse for that. Bryce Harper might be, but like those two guys, they're just a guy. He's just a guy that shows up all the time. He's awesome, and he's one of those another generational talents that the price never totally catches up with him for how good he is and how good the team is. So yeah, I love Bryant today. I just love all. It's going to be really, really close on some of these guys tonight. And
so
it's
much love going around, buddy. This is what happens when we get together. You know, bring the families together. You just got the love pouring out of you.
I feel great, man. This has been a great week for us, I think. So, okay, so we've touched on the Cubs. We touched on the Rangers, which I really can't overstate enough. That Ranger line is so high. You really, outside of cores, you never see teams almost never see teams with implied run lines at six. even if it were to come down, it's still in some like in a totally crazy range. So
do you like any of those Rockies guys then against Martin?
Nah, their thing is still low. The Rockies just aren't a very good team.
Too many lefties.
I don't mind Arenado because he just totally crushes lefties. But after that, like their team is just. The top of their lineup is lefty heavy. If assuming Cargo were to come back today, he might be hurt. Blackman, lefty at the top. LeMay, who's actually been pretty good this year. The bottom of the lineup is so bad. They just can't. It's harder for them to string things together.
You're not going to play guys in the bottom of the lineup anyway, right? I mean,
no.
You don't need the guys in the bottom of the lineup.
No. My point being, I do like Arenado in this situation, but again, you get guys like Beltre in hitting third and with 50% more runs implied. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Actual good hitters around him.
Right. So any other one-off kind of guys that you see cheaper bats that come in if we're just looking to load up in other places, but we need to save here and there?
Well, we talked about the Pirates before. Josh Harrison is a guy who's been batting leadoff and yeah, righty-righty. It's not the ideal spot for him, but so cheap that I'm going to have a hard time probably not playing him at second base. So he's definitely one guy that comes to mind for me. And then, I mean, you can kind of just pay up in most spots today, but do you have any other value guys you're looking at?
Actually, Harrison was the guy. He's still coming so cheap on DraftKings, only 3,300, and that is just almost too good of a spot, especially at a relatively weaker position at second. So yeah, he was actually the guy I had in mind.
Javier Baez, 2,800.
Bregman is still coming cheap on FanDuel. He's been putting points together. He got thrown out at home last night, which is like one of those like little those little things that swing. They swing cash lines. That was the difference of that 3 points last night for some lineups is the difference of cashing or not cashing. So getting thrown out at home, but he's still hitting second. That lineup's still coming very cheap on FanDuel. The days of you getting these prices on him are going to be numbered. So take advantage now, please. And so still hitting second, still in a good spot.
So let's. You bring up a good point about Bregman getting thrown out of home. We mentioned Tulo popping up to first earlier. And this is the point, something we've been trying to work with our users and the people in the chat room in particular with, which is actually analyzing what happened the previous day. So in basketball, it's a little bit more straightforward. Football, same thing. Like if your wide receiver just never gets the ball thrown at him in a certain game, you can be pretty confident that your process was just poor. In basketball, if your guy plays 18 minutes, you had him projected for 27, like maybe your process was poor, maybe it wasn't, foul
maybe
trouble,
it was
whatever.
Right. Okay, right.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that can go into it. Mm-hmm. With baseball, though, I'm observing our user having a higher level of difficulty than usual, actually figuring out what happened in the previous day. So I'd love to just dive into that really quick and help people sort of analyze both their wins and their losses,
Right, because when you look at a game, and look, you cannot watch every baseball game, so this is not a go and watch all the games and then decide. So okay, right, don't go to watching games and decide if you think he took bad swings at something or something like that. That is not something
you're not qualified.
Any of us are.
If you're listening to this right now, Peter Gammons, cover your ears for a second. If you're listening to this right now,
right,
you can't analyze the way a guy looked in a given at bat and. If that was a good fantasy player.
It also presupposes that you're going to watch every batter and understand the thing about every single batter, and you just simply can't do that. So even if you were qualified to do it, it means you have to go watch every guy. So you can't. Sure. So you're not going to be able to do it. So beyond that, what can we look at starting the next day or even during the game? Whether it was the process what was broken? Is it bad luck? What are some things I can look at?
Well, so let's start with pitchers. When we're looking at pitchers, the first thing we want to look at, there's a few major assumptions that we can make, a few things we can even bother trying to project, right? So the first one is the number of innings pitched. If a guy gets in there and goes 3 innings in a given game or 4 innings, and we had him touted as like the safest play of the day, well, maybe we need to analyze and figure out, what caused that to happen, right? So that's the first thing I'll look at. And then once we go into it, figure out, well, why did he lose some innings? So a lot of times a guy will lose innings because he was bad, right? He's mm-hmm. walking a bunch of guys. Things are getting out of control. He's letting up a bunch of home runs, whatever. But a lot of times it just happens to be that, those things that could be double plays. Like, we watched last night, Mike Leake, not a good pitcher, but he was literally two batters in a row. One sneaks through and knocks in a run. The very next pitch is a double play. So it's like, mm-hmm. You can't look at either of those as indicative of his true talent level, probably. It's just some are going to be double plays, some aren't. So we're looking at the big three true outcomes with pitchers, right? So it's strikeouts, walks, and slugging percentage allowed. Basically, we're ignoring singles almost altogether, and we're just trying to figure out, did we do a good job at projecting those more peripheral stats.
Right, and like, you know, a guy like Maeda last night, you look at it and you say, okay, Maeda was what we did call the safest cash game play. He barely makes it through six innings, but he kind of displayed some of the worries that we had about him going in, which was running up long, big pitch counts early because he's just having trouble putting a batter away. And so some of those things that we thought could be problems did actually creep into it. And that the only things that were killing his safety was that if you can't put a batter away at 1-2, and now you're at 3-2, and that happened a lot for him. So maybe the thought process was correct. I still would play him again, but some of the worries that we had did creep into the narrative of what was actually happening in the game.
Sure, and when we're projecting innings pitched, I should say, a lot of that does simply come down to pitch counts. And if we look at a guy, like we talked about this with Hamill last week, we talked about the error we made with Darvish projecting too low a pitch count, but when we're looking at a guy and he's only been throwing 90 pitches per game, and then he throws 115, but there was no reason for him, we should also say, well, hey, we might have just gotten lucky here. You know, we can't pat ourselves on the back because of random 20% boost in pitches. You know?
And I suspect with Maeda last night, we did get lucky because they wanted to get him through the fifth so that he could get the win. And because that is a thing that plays into these managers' minds of this, that mental aspect of they were up like seven runs. Like he didn't need to stick around in that game. But they pushed his pitch count, I think, just to get him enough for the win. Now, the other side of it is the bats, right? And we mentioned a little bit with Smiley that if you would look at Smiley's line after the game, independent of runs scored, you would have just jammed a lot of money in on the Blue Jays because you would have been like, wow, they got on base, they weren't striking out, so they're putting the ball in play. If I were to guess about the runs, so like it's almost like we talked a little bit last night about like fantasy point expectation in a situation in terms of either in a micro situation, like a guy is up here and this is how many points he's expected to score, or over the whole game. You know, you can probably sum it up better than I can, like our discussion last night. It was specifically related to a Tulo at bat.
Yeah, well, okay, so let's rewind for a second and just go to the pitchers thing. So if we stack the Blue Jays, the best way to analyze how our Blue Jays stack worked out is just to look at the line of the opposing pitcher, because this will happen a lot where we stack a guy against, you know, some random call-up who's not actually a major league quality pitcher, and people say, how'd that Red Sox stack work out against the bum guy from the Padres who was called up, you know? And we say, okay, well, if you could tell me, so say the guy goes six innings with one strikeout and three walks, like similar to what Smiley's line was last night, but doesn't give up any earned runs. Well, in that case, he's come in, he faced 22 batters, and we know that the Red Sox are going to put the ball in play 18 times in the 22 batters that come up. If I'm going to get 18 balls in play from the Red Sox in 22 plate appearances, I'm thrilled, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I can just look at their lines, right? Like, I can go look at, see what happens when Ortiz puts the ball in play, see what happens when Pedroia or Bogarts and Betts and all those other guys do when they put the ball in play, and probably look, and you can, if you want, you can just go compare that to previous games and say, well, what did they do in a similar number of balls in play against the Rays and the Rockies and whoever else, and actually figure out, you can start to get the eyeball test on this pretty reliably. Like, if a guy goes six innings, seven strikeouts, one walk, like, the opposing pitcher probably did a pretty nice job. You know, there's some outliers there, but that's a great place to begin. And then if you're watching the game and sort of rewinding and figuring out what happened, you can look at, I mean, it can be helpful to go plate appearance by plate appearance and just figure out what sort of the average situation a guy was in when he was up. So take a look at Tulowitzki last night. Comes up with bases loaded and nobody out. You can sort of start to figure out what the natural range of outcomes is, right? So say you go back and Tulo has, I don't know, a 380 on base percentage with the bases loaded. That might be low, actually. In particular against left-handed pitching, given that Tulo's 100 OPS points better against lefties for his career. You can go in there and say, well, okay, 38% of the time, he's at least going to walk, right? Well, what does a walk do in this situation? It gets him 3 points for the walk. It gets him 3 points for the RBI, right? So that's worth 6 points. And then you can actually start going through and say, well, you know, 8% of the time, he's going to hit a home run. And you know, you start to add up these points. And coming up with the bases loaded, I haven't actually run the math on this, but coming up with the bases loaded and nobody out against a lefty for Troy Tulowitzki is probably worth something like 8 or 9 points on its own. So I don't think you can just look at Troy Tulowitzki's overall line. And now, granted, coming up with bases loaded and nobody out was already sort of lucky in the first place, but I think what we're trying to help you do and what we do when we analyze stuff like this is just figure out what a more sort of realistic or fair points expectation, because it can go the other way too, right? Like, you know, we were talking about last week Manny Machado from a couple of days ago.
Sure.
We don't want to look at that and say, hey, great job by us. Like, we knew Machado was going to hit three home runs in the first three innings. Well, of course we didn't. What we did was say, you know, in the average sort of circumstance, he's going to score a higher number of points this game than usual, and especially as compared to his price. Now, did his hitting 3 home runs in 3 innings sort of justify that? Well, on some level it did, because it would have been very unlikely for that to happen against Clayton Kershaw, right? But on a high level, we're more trying to look at the opportunity, how the other pitcher did peripherally. Did they chase the opposing pitcher in the first couple innings? These are the sort of things we really want to look at when we're figuring out, did we do a good job or not? And I should say, doing it on a one-game basis is almost impossible anyway, so we're just trying to, but it is a small, relevant piece of data that's just come up, you know.
And it's really, we get that it's hard to do this because in a lot of ways the results are binary. I won or I lost, right? Like in DFS, like I look at it and I get to the end of the night and the results are this: I have more money in my FanDuel account now, or I have less money in my FanDuel account than when the game started. Yeah. And it can be hard, and even in the moment. Like we had people coming in last night and saying, you know, things not looking good right now. And I'm thinking, the starting pitcher hasn't pitched yet, you know? So, like the guy Bameda hasn't even taken the mound yet. So, like, I get that it's really hard to sort of sweat a baseball slate and look at every micro thing that happens in a game and say, it's just not for me tonight, or this isn't going to happen. And then it swings wild. It's almost like manic, because it swings wildly the other way.
Mildly wouldn't be that impressive, by the way. right. Things are swinging mildly right now. You just got to walk. That's an extra 3 points.
So anyway, we get that it's hard. We're just trying to like think about like what approach you can take, especially in game. Two things in game. But I mean, starting from 7 o'clock till midnight, you know, while the games are happening, what approach can you take to say, okay, this is working out well? You don't need to take the approach when things are working out great, because you just know things are working out great, so fine, whatever. I'm talking about when things do not seem like they're going well, stop and just think for a moment. Is it because my process was bad, or because that this just, you know, the ball doesn't trickle through the infield and now I'm a little bit below the cap?
Sure, and you don't want to default to the emotional reaction of, oh, I knew I should, Bautista, you know, because like a great example is comparing the reactions of people who kind of hang out in the chat all night and the guys who just show up at 11:30 and say, we missed again, you know. And even if, like you said, to your point, last night we didn't miss.
No, so, we won. I mean, but ROI on both sides.
The guys who, the regulars, the people who are in the chat room very frequently are like, whoa, slow down. Like, we had Stanton's broken bat near home run.
Oh, that was amazing, by the way.
Just a feats of strength.
Yeah.
And we had Bautista's near miss as well. So, like, the double is 6 points. Not bad. You know, better than expectation. Bautista's not going to get 6 points per plate appearance. But it would have been nice to get those 18 points, though.
Right. 24 fantasy points between those two near miss of home runs is a huge, by a total of 2 feet.
On a given night, like if you start the night with plus 24 points, you almost can't lose.
And just the last point, and we've written about this also too in some of our strategy pieces, but the emotional piece comes from the money investment and whether or not you feel comfortable with how much money you have in play on a certain slate. And you are going to be much more emotional when the number is put toward the breaking point for you personally.
When you're in like the double digit percent of your bankroll per night.
Right, exactly. Like if I have $0 rolling and I have Tulowitzki, I kind of don't care, right? And then the number goes up, the percentage goes up with each dollar invested. And the emotion and the sort of the tilt comes from being, are you making good decisions by how much you're putting into play on certain outcomes, right? And so this slate is only has so many outcomes are going to happen. I need to make sure that my money invested here is a comfortable thing for me so that my life, my just overall life goes okay.
Sure. I think we nailed it, buddy.
We definitely nailed it. All right. That is it for us today. A long 30 minutes of baseball and 8 minutes of just trying to make sure our process is sound. DFSR.com is a site, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. You head over. I'm Doug Norrie. That's James Davis. You grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, and you're all set for FanDuel and DraftKings. NFL coming very, very soon. We're really excited about that. Take a look for what the tools that we're going to have coming in the next, I would say, week to 10 days. All right, buddy. We'll be back again tomorrow. Hopefully it cools off a little bit.
Yeah, unless we die of dehydration.